Tonight in the studio, I have James Green, who's running for supervisor seat in the 1st District, running against Glenn McGordy, John Kennedy, and John Sackowick. So there's four folks running for the seat that's being vacated by Carrie Brown. So I'm going to start by asking James a few questions, and then at 10 after, I'll open the phone lines so you can call in and ask a question directly of James Green. Callers will have a maximum of 1 minute to ask a question, and the candidate will have 1 minute or so to respond. And I'd appreciate it if you could have your questions ready and refrain from commentary so we can hear from as many callers as possible. Also, as always, keep it about issues, no personal or ad hominem attacks. All right, so welcome, James Green, to KZYX. Thank you for coming in.
Good evening, Alicia. Thank you for having me, and good evening, Mendocino County. Thanks for tuning in and listening.
All right, would you take a moment to introduce yourself and explain why you're running for 1st District Supervisor?
Absolutely. Well, to start with, I'm a California native, and I'm a graduate of California State University Long Beach with a degree in business, and I was raised by a hardworking single mother, and I started my working life working in hotels to put myself through school. I grew up in Orange County, where I watched orange groves and strawberry fields get steamrolled and demolished and replaced with blacktop and concrete, so I knew pretty early on that I wanted to end up somewhere else, and a place just like Mendocino County, so it's a privilege to be here. I have 25 years in the information technologies field, collaborating with teams to overcome challenges and achieve results, and I think that's what we need right now to help solve our most critical issues, a lot of collaboration and a lot of cooperation. I've established relationships with community and agricultural and business leaders here, and I've done that by attending many of the community meetings and the Board of Supervisors meetings, which has proven invaluable to understand what's really going on. And my wife, she's a doctor, Kristen Laporte, at OBGYN at the Care for Her Clinic in Ukiah, and I'm serving the community through Rotary and through the Neighborhood Fire Safe Council. These have been wonderful avenues to really get to know the community through these programs, and I'm proud of it.
And how long have you lived in the county? What brought you up here?
Okay, so we've only been here for 5 years, and I know that's going to put some voters off. And I don't know how long it takes to actually become a permanent resident, or in the eyes of many, to be an actual part of the community.
Local.
But, you know, it doesn't take long to actually get involved, to get your feet wet. Rotary was a great jumping-off point for me. What brought us up here, of course, was my wife's desire to serve rural California, and I think she's doing a really good job providing excellent medical care for the women of Mendocino County.
All right, so let's start with your background in IT and tech. That is a very different industry than the industries here in Mendocino County. And so I'm curious, although obviously relevant to us, mm-hmm. how do you envision your experience in tech serving you here in a rural county that still has large pockets with no internet connectivity or cell phone service?
Well, when we moved here, it was fortunate, or I should say we actually sought this out. We certainly seeked out a neighborhood that had high-speed internet. It was important because I was still working. I was working for Mattel. That was my last contract. So we were fortunate in the Deerwood community. We have Xfinity, and that's 25 to 50 megabits per second. That's tech lingo for high speed. So we were pretty happy about that. I do understand that much of the rural portion of Mendocino County is not that fortunate, which is why I do support the Broadband Initiative and the Broadband Alliance. The county has contributed another $40,000 this fiscal year to keep up the work on that project, and I'd really like to see the support there until it's completed. I think broadband helps bring our community together.
There's something culturally different about tech and the tech industry than what you find up here in Mendocino County. Mm-hmm. And that's, I know that there's a lot of efforts to get broadband, and to, you know, there is also opposition to that too in the county for folks culturally who want to keep the more rural nature. So there's, you know, there's tension between the different points of view. But I also have experience in both communities, and I just think it's interesting to think about how those communities may interact. What do you bring from tech that might be a benefit?
Well, I think it's important to understand that what we're talking about in terms of broadband is this really helps our economy. This helps our public safety. And this also helps extended learning programs. And again, I really think that when the broadband initiative is completed and all of our rural community feels less isolated, I really think it's going to help change the cohesiveness of our county and bring us all together. I have, my career was spent interacting with the public, with customers, with clients, trying to bridge the gap of those that don't understand technology and those that do. That actually has been much, as has been a giant part of my career.
Are there tech answers for some of the issues that affect Mendocino County?
Well, I think so. One high priority that I certainly feel needs to be addressed is our communication system. It's the one that law enforcement and our first responders use. There's been presentations in front of the Board of Supervisors that said it is well out of date. It is beyond its life. And when someone sits there and tells the board, we are buying parts on eBay just to keep it afloat, that's a red flag. I'm sorry. That can't be kicked down the river anymore. We need to address that immediately.
Yeah, very antiquated communication systems here. And everybody in all of the agencies will readily tell you this is a huge problem. But the big issue, of course, in District 1 in Potter Valley, Redwood Valley, is the fate of the Potter Valley Project.
Mm-hmm.
So the Potter Valley Project, when you say that, we use the shorthand, but it's really describing two dams,
mm-hmm.
and a water diversion and a hydroelectric plant that
yes.
was built by a long time ago, almost 100 years
ago. Early 20th century. Yes.
Yeah, and was recently owned by PG&E, who has put it up on the market.
Yes.
So you have said that in looking for solutions to what to do with the Potter Valley Project, everything is on the table. But you've also said that both dams need to stay put. So, of course, we've heard a lot from Jared Huffman and his Potter Valley Committee about the two-basin solution. And one of the parts of that they're looking at is the removal of Scott Dam, but keeping the seasonal diversion from the Eel River during the rainy season in order to allow fish passage into the upper reaches of the watershed. What's your understanding of the two-basin solution, and how is it possible to take dam removal off the table before they've even had the conversations about what the studies show about what's possible for the fish survival?
Okay, that was quite a bit of information, so let's throw some more out there. Scott Dam is the dam that actually forms Lake Pillsbury, and it's 130 feet tall. Right now, there's no fish passage. You can fire an air cannon to get the fish over. You can drop them from parachutes. I'm not kidding. These are all ideas that people have floated.
Put them in a truck and drive them up too.
Right. So, part of the ad hoc committee that Congressman Huffman has put forth is to say we need two winning solutions here. One that addresses the fish passage. And of course, the other being the water supply for not just Mendocino, but of course, Sonoma, all the way down to North Marin. This supplies 600,000 people with water, not just Mendocino County. So the Potter Valley Water Project, we say the name, but it's sort of a misnomer when we're talking about the vastness of the water supply here.
Well, and it was never a water project. It was an hydroelectric project.
That's right. It was. And currently that project still sits there, and it's less than an 8-megawatt hydroelectric plant. PG&E is, let's use the word, punting it. They're not putting it up for sale. It's not a sale situation. They are actually just dropping it in somebody else's lap. So now we have the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission involved, a bunch of feasibility studies that need to be completed by April of this year, which I know Janet Pauly and the Inland Water and Power Commission group, they're fighting so hard to get that extended, and because we're just not going to get that done, and I think FERC knows that, and there is progress being made. We've hired the consultants to do it, but there's so much work that still needs to be done to secure this project. So we've got Cal Trout in our group now, and we've got the Round Valley Tribe, and we've got Sonoma Water. So all these entities are coming to the table, and they haven't even developed the new entity's name yet. We don't know what it's going to look like.
We keep calling it the consortium.
Right.
And nobody knows what we're talking about.
That's right. So a lack of terminology also leads to a little public confusion on where we are in this fight. But to go back to your first statement, I've said some things, but it's my opinion that the dams need to stay put to secure the water supply for our agricultural community here in Mendocino County. We're producing $182 million worth of agriculture, $700 million total if you take the multiplier effect. And then you've got $16 million in taxes and 5,000 jobs with the Potter Valley Water Project intact as it stands today. So, of course, I'm an advocate for keeping the water flowing in this direction at its current rate.
And I doubt it would be possible to get elected in the first district if you were advocating for the removal of one or both of those dams.
Well, now you're just you're throwing me under the bus there with a little bit of what my motive truly is.
Well,
but yeah.
You know, everyone to the south seems to want the dams, and everyone to the north seems to want the fish.
It's a fair statement, yes, but it is a political fight. It's a political issue, especially during campaign season. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I just wonder about how to approach problem solving when it seems like threading the needle from the people who have gotten the benefit of this water for so long.
Mm-hmm.
The many hundreds of thousands of people have never had to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So something is going to have to change with the Potter Valley Project, and the supervisor from the first district is going to have to lead on that.
You're right. You're actually leading me to where we need to go. And this is not a secret. I think even Janet Pauley has been putting this out there for everyone to become aware and to get ready for the water to be monetized. I think everyone's starting to accept that we really don't see how we're going to get around monetizing the water. Yes, we have not. No one's been used to paying for this water, but that's going to have to change.
All right. So thank you for going there with me around the Potter Valley Project. I just find that it's useful to talk about it because it's so complicated that every time we bring it up, we learn more.
Absolutely.
Now let's open up the phone lines for questions from the listeners. Callers, the number to call in is 707-895-2448. We'll put you directly on the air and directly in conversation with James Green, who is a candidate for first district supervisor, so you can ask him questions directly yourself. I'll give you 1 minute to ask your question, and then I'll give the candidate 1 minute to answer. We'll try to get as many people in as possible. We're talking with James Green, candidate for first district supervisor. He's running against three other candidates in the district for the March 3rd primary is when the election will take place. So that's 707-895-2448. And if you're a voter in the first district, I'd love to hear from you. But of course, the supervisors on the Mendocino County Board are voting and working with the other supervisors on issues that affect everybody in the county.
Mm-hmm.
So you're welcome to call in from any district. And we do have our first call. Good evening, caller. You're live on the air.
Okay, good evening. Hi. I'm a homeowner in Potter Valley, and I have a quick comment, and I do have a question. Again, I would argue that, you know, as far as the monetization of the water, again, I live right next to the Potter Valley Irrigation District. So in a sense, it is being monetized in the valley proper for agriculture. And my question is for the candidate, is the concern really monetizing it for the people south of the dam, or south of Lake Mendocino, rather, since, again, those are the people who are the vast beneficiaries for the most part in numbers. Thank you, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, thanks for that question.
Okay. I want to make sure I understood the question correctly. I think he's saying that more so the residents are concerned that the water is going to be monetized. Well, that's absolutely a fair concern. We're all used to paying just the base rate. We all pay a rate just to get the water trucked up the hill if we live in, you know, Regina Heights or Deerwood or El Dorado. It will be a shock, and of course there's concern, but the benefits of the water outweigh, I think, what monetizing formula comes out of it. I wouldn't sway me to change my mind about this. I have to accept, and I think all the residents have to accept, that this is going to be a reality, and the bottom line is, there's no choice. We don't have an alternate water supply. So if we take that into consideration, I think we'll have to go, yeah, we're going to have to figure something out, and we're going to have to adjust. So again, there is no alternative. This is the reality.
I also think the caller was getting at the relationship of the downstream communities in Sonoma County, mm-hmm. and south of the Coyote Valley Dam, I think, and what that relationship with monetization. Are they going to be charged for it, or is it going to be a focus on the residents?
Well, that has not been decided, obviously. It's funny. I had a meeting with Senator McGuire, and he took the time to meet with me, and I told him my biggest fear, my first decision, if I win this election, will be how to divide the water increase. How am I going to do it? Am I going to have to stick it to agriculture? Am I going to have to stick it to the residents? This was my biggest fear of actually facing this challenge, and it looks like it's coming to fruition.
And it's because this Potter Valley project is so expensive,
yes,
to maintain. All right, we have another caller. Good evening, caller. You're live on the air with James Green, candidate for First District Supervisor.
Hi, I was wondering what your opinion was on glycophosphates, Roundup herbicides.
Well, knowing what I know and reading what I've read, none of it sounds good. I would do my best to make sure it stays out of our soil, out of our watersheds, and keep it out of Mendocino County as best as we can. But I'm one voice in five on the board, and I know there's going to be continued discussion about this as we move forward, especially when it comes to more conversations about, you know, Measure V, Hack and Squirt, you know, it even drifts into the GMO discussion and things like that. So Mendocino County, of course, I want it to have a wonderful reputation to be a clean and safe place for everyone.
All right. The phone number is 707-895-2448. If you'd like to call in and ask a question directly of First District Supervisor candidate James Green, who's, of course, the First District is Potter Valley, Redwood Valley, and the east side of Ukiah Valley in Talmadge area, Deerwood. Mm-hmm. Does it go down into Hopland as well?
Not that far. If you went down Old River Road, there's some imaginary line somewhere between Talmadge and Hopland where the district ends.
Well, and of course, your district, First District, has been kind of the hardest hit, I think, if there was a contest, by the perceived ravages of climate change. It's been, the worst hit areas from fire, at least in terms of destruction and lives lost. Mm-hmm. You're also, of course, as we were just talking about, ground zero for water issues and agriculture. All of these are really hot issues that are going to be affected by hot, little pun there, are going to be affected by climate change. So, right. You know that last year the Board of Supervisors approved the formation of the Mendocino County Climate Action Advisory Committee. Do you think that the Climate Action Advisory Committee can play a leadership role in Mendocino for climate preparedness or not? And if so, how? And if not, why not?
Yes, this is when it went in front of the board. It was contentious. It was the room was heated. So when you're in the room, you can feel the tension. So specifically talking about the climate action advisory committee, I'm not a climate change denier. Climate change is here. It makes us think about our water management resources, how we're going to store water, how we use water, soil content changes, air wind patterns changing for fire threat. So, and again, go back to the Potter Valley Water Project for a second. The Russian River is so important for ponds. It's for not just Lake Mendocino and Lake Pillsbury, but for also ponds. Our fire department, Cal Fire, was using those ponds to actually help firefighting.
Firefighting, sure.
Yeah, during those fires. So the Climate Action Advisory Committee is going to be very helpful. I haven't seen, and I don't think anybody has, what are the realistic goals? What is the expectation of the advisory committee? Right now, it's an advisory committee, and it's costing the county $7,500 with possible expansion in next year's fiscal year's budget. My concern is that with all the other high priorities on the plate for the county, you know, we can talk about ambulance service, we can talk about the communication systems that we've touched on, very little reserve for an economic downturn, road conditions causing road rage. We have a lot of high priorities on our plate. I think the Climate Action Advisory Committee is going to be helpful. I just don't want to see the cost balloon any more than where it is right now because of all these other high priorities, and that's my position.
That's the first time I've heard road rage be raised as a high priority issue in the county.
Trademark. I'll just use that.
I mean, Bay Area, yeah, but do we have a road rage epidemic in Mendocino?
I was going for comedic punch there, but
oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I mean, sometimes the log trucks get pretty slow. You get stuck behind them and, you know, get a little irate from that.
You know, I thought I left all the horn honking behind, but I do hear it from when a tractor gets on Rittermeyer Road or a log truck on Highway 128.
Or Highway 20.
Or Highway 20, yeah.
Between Willits and Fort Bragg. Yes, absolutely. So, and I wonder, too, if the Climate Action Advisory Committee or if the county's climate preparedness planning can be something that contributes to economic development too, a la the Green New Deal. Like, is there? I hear you say climate planning may just be too expensive, and we shouldn't let it take away from other needed urgent services. But what about the impact that climate is going to have on everybody's lives as we move forward? We've already had these power shutoffs, which we can link directly to increased temperatures and high winds, mm-hmm. And climate. Cause change or climate changes. So what are the costs if we don't act?
That's a fair question. Absolutely. I'm addressing it from the standpoint of we have high priorities that I think we need to address right now. I firmly believe that the advisory committee will be helpful. It can be helpful. And you do bring up a fair point. I'm definitely focused on the here and now. I'm trying not to, I don't want to kick the can down the river, but at the same time, I really feel like our emergency response system and the lack of ambulance coverage, those to me are higher priorities. And since we have a board that has made no consensus on where to cut the budget, we have to start looking at identifying new expenditures that we could possibly postpone until we get the rest of the high priorities under control.
All right. This is KZYX. You're listening to an interview with James Green, who is a candidate for First District Supervisor. So that seat that's being vacated by Carrie Brown in Potter Valley. James is one of four candidates who is running to fill that seat. And you can call and ask him a question yourself, 707-895-2448. And I'll put you right on the air. That's 707-895-2448. So you've mentioned ambulances a couple of times,
yeah.
And the crisis in ambulance coverage. But let's put a pin in that because we've got a caller.
Okay.
Good evening, caller. You're live on the air.
Yes, I wanted to ask, there's something about the words hack and squirt that makes me feel very uncomfortable. Are they still doing that? You know, because I've read that they're still doing that.
Great question. Thank you, caller.
Okay, so I'll take it on the air, and he sounds great.
Thank you.
But,
to answer the question, yes, hack and squirt is still a practice. It's important to understand what Measure V actually does and how it was written. It doesn't stop the practice of hack and squirt, but only to declare the dead or dying trees a public nuisance. Now, while we're on the subject, nothing erodes the public trust faster than to have a measure be put on the ballot, pass, and then have that measure fail to be enforced, which is happening right now. The last Board of Supervisors meeting, February 4th, the room is stacked. You see people holding up yes on V. There's tension in the room, and for good reason. County Council, at the Board of Supervisors' request, will provide a plan of enforcement, finally, at the March 24th Board of Supervisors meeting, and I advise everyone to be there for it. I certainly plan to be. I think the public is tired of waiting and wants this resolved. It's been over 3 years. Until then, it's a stain on our democracy. Now, to go back a little bit, I want to talk about what happened at the February 4th meeting. There were two public speakers that went to the podium and expressed fear in filing a complaint against Mendocino Redwood Company. Naomi Wagner and Margie Chandler, if you're listening, I hear you. And I am encouraging you to go to my website and get my contact information so we can talk further about what fear you're feeling. After they took their 3 minutes to exercise their democratic right, I thought for sure one of the Board of Supervisors would stand up or at least show compassion or empathy and ask, well, why do you feel fear? What is directly happening? Why do you feel that? But none of the board members actually took the opportunity. It was a missed opportunity to repair the lost trust that this measure has actually caused. No one in Mendocino County should feel this way. Democracy doesn't thrive like this. As ex-Sheriff Tom Allman always likes to say when he's at the podium, this is a complaint-driven county. So if the public loses its trust in county government and they don't file complaints, well, guess what? Nothing's going to change. So again, Margie, Naomi, if you're out there listening, I hear you.
And what does enforcement look like? What are the nuts and bolts of enforcement of Measure V? Even if you feel strongly, mm-hmm. as many people do, that it should be enforced because of the democratic process,
mm-hmm.
how do you do it?
Well, I have to say, I'm not a legal expert. I am not a legal expert. The measure itself has no enforcement trigger. There's no enforcement written in Measure V. So, Supervisor McCowan, I'll try to get I'll paraphrase what he said. He said it's self-enforcing. Therefore, it's a public nuisance. It's self-enforcing. Therefore, if this dead or dying tree causes damage to your house, you could sue Mendocino Redwood Company. Well, nobody was happy with that. And I'm not blaming Mr. McCowan. I'm just saying that's an interpretation of a lack of enforcement or a lack of enforcement measure written into Measure V. So we're all going to have to wait and see what county council comes back on March 24th. And I'm excited to see what he comes back with.
And do you have any ideas about how you as First District Supervisor could provide leadership toward the enforcement of Measure V?
It really depends on what Christian Curtis County Council comes back with. Nothing's going to be easy, I can tell you that. And I know John Anderson, representative from Mendocino Redwood Company, went to the podium and said, no, we don't. I don't know what MRC plans to do. Well, I'm not going to call John out, but let me just say MRC has a plan. They have attorneys. They know exactly what they're going to do. This is not a, well, we'll wait and see. No, they already submitted a letter saying they don't acknowledge the legality of this. So that speaks volumes right there. So.
All right. And do you agree with those people on the board of supervisors who think the best thing to do is to work together with MRC?
Oh, let me just say there's no harm in it. Absolutely not. I know Supervisor Hashtag, he's on the ad hoc committee. He's working with the stakeholders involved to try to broker a solution. I know they're working hard to find economic alternatives for Tan Oak, but I don't think that's the purview of the board. We shouldn't be involved in finding an alternative use for Tan Oak. That's not our responsibility. I want to make sure the board is just sort of playing moderator and referee for the stakeholders. We do not, it's not our business to help MRC economically find an alternative for Tan Oak. That's not what we do. That's not what we should do.
All right. Well, the half hour has just raced by, so we're at that point where it's time to start wrapping up. It's been a little bit quiet on the phones, but I appreciate the conversation that we've had, and thank you for the callers who have called in. This is Alicia Bales. I'm here live in the studio with James Green, who, as I've said, is the candidate for First District Supervisor. We actually have one more call, so let's see if we can fit this in,
okay?
And then we'll wrap it up. Good evening, caller. Do you have a quick question for James Green?
Yeah, what's your opinion on disbandment of PG&E and to take it over as a public utility?
All right. Thank you for that.
That's not a quick answer.
I'm sorry. You have 10
quick,
seconds.
Real quick. Obviously, PG&E's already expressed interest to get out of the electricity generating side of it. They're keeping ownership of the power lines. We can go on and on and on about the value of PG&E and what they've done, but we'll skip it. I really want to see what the state comes up with as an alternative, and we'll leave it at that.
Do the counties have a leadership role to play there?
We have obviously we have our organizations like California State Association of Counties and RCRC Rural County Representatives of California. Geez, thank you very much. So through those groups, we'll have a say in Sacramento what can be done.
All right. We're going to wrap it up now. I'll ask you, James, do you have any closing remarks, and how do people find your campaign?
I do. Well, thank you, Alicia, and thank you, KZYX, for actually doing this service. This is a great way for the public to actually hear the candidates speak a little bit more freely. The candidate forums are 60-second answers followed by a 30 seconds of follow-up, and you have a one-minute opening statement. It's very structured, and there's a reason for it, and that's fine. But I just wanted to thank KZYX for doing this. During the campaign, you've heard 9 different voices, two from District 4 and 4 from my district and 3 from District 2. During the campaign season, we speak a lot of problems, negative energy that's there because that's what we do in campaigns. We talk about the problems and what we're going to do to fix them. But I just want to end with something on the positive side. Mendocino County has nearly 90,000 residents with easy access to incredible scenery and nature, from the lighthouses through the coast to Montgomery Woods to Anderson Valley to the endless vineyards in the Ukiah Valley to, of course, Lake Mendocino and Lake Pillsbury. It's a privilege and a blessing to live here. And, of course, you can find out more about me at jamesgreensupervisor.com, and I have a Facebook page with the tag Green Team Mendo.
All right. Well, thank you, James Green, for coming in. Thanks to the callers who called in. You can hear the archive of this program at kzyx.org on our Elections 2020 page. And tune in tomorrow night at 6 o'clock when the candidate will be John Kennedy, who is also running for the 1st District Supervisor seat.